This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Hello, this is the April 4th, 2014 podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. My name is Natalie Pinsham, and I'll be reading summaries of articles on functional neurosurgery, trauma, vascular disorders, oncology, and hydrocephalus. Deep brain stimulation for Huntington's disease, long-term results of a prospective open-label study. A clinical article by Victoria Gonzalez and colleagues. In this article, the authors study the motor outcome of a group of 7 consecutive patients with Huntington's disease. They were included in a prospective open-label study of bilateral globus pallidus internus deep brain stimulation, or GPI-DBS. This study provides information about long-term effects of DBS in the context of this neurodegenerative disease. To date, experience of GPI-DBS in the treatment of Huntington's disease has been limited to a small number of case reports. The median duration of follow-up in the author's study was 3 years. They found a sustained therapeutic effect on chorea, with a mean improvement in the chorea subscore of 58.3% at the 12-month visit and 59.8% at the 3-year visit. They confirmed this response during regular follow-up by means of clinical assessment during temporary interruption of DBS treatment. The study also demonstrated the lack of response of dystonia and bradykinesia to this therapy in patients with Huntington's disease. The authors conclude that GPI-DBS may provide sustained chorea improvement in selected patients with pharmacologically resistant chorea, and that it may provide with transient benefit in quality of life before progression of behavioral and cognitive disorders. Further studies are needed to refine eligibility criteria for GPI-DBS and to analyze the impact of this therapy in the long-term outcome of this disease. Extracranial traumatic aneurysms due to blunt cerebrovascular injury. A clinical article by Paul Foreman and co-authors. Traumatic cerebrovascular injury is defined as an extracranial or intracranial cerebrovascular structural defect that is directly attributable to a known high-energy non-penetrating injury. It is estimated to occur in 1% of all blunt force trauma. Increased recognition of patients with traumatic cerebrovascular injury in the past quarter century has been due to aggressive screening protocols and non-invasive imaging with computed tomography and angiography. Extracranial carotid artery and vertebral artery injuries demonstrate a spectrum of severity, ranging from intimal disruption to arterial transection. The authors focused on grade 3 injuries, the traumatic aneurysm. 13 patients harbored 26 traumatic aneurysms of the cervical and vertebral arteries. The incidence of traumatic aneurysm formation with established traumatic cerebrovascular injury was 10%. All patients were treated with antiplatelet medication following identification of their traumatic cerebrovascular injury. 3 of the 13 patients experienced ischemic complications. However, no patient experienced an ischemic complication following the initiation of antiplatelet medication. Endovascular stenting was utilized for the treatment of only 2 traumatic aneurysms. Both were larger than 15 millimeters with continued growth on follow-up imaging. Importantly, 2 morphological subtypes of traumatic aneurysms were identified, saccular and fusiform. While both were treated primarily with antiplatelet medications, the fusiform subtype is felt to carry a more benign natural history. Intracranial pressure following complete removal of a small demarcated brain tumor, a model for normal intracranial pressure in humans. A clinical article by Morten Andresen and Marianne Dula. Using long-term telemetric monitoring, the authors present a model for normal intracranial pressure in humans. The patients in the study were without cerebrospinal fluid dynamic disturbances and underwent uncomplicated complete tumor removal. The aim of the study was to provide a reference range for normal intracranial pressure. In this pilot study of four patients, the authors measured a mean intracranial pressure of 0.5 millimeters of mercury in the supine position, which was lower than previously published normal values. Additionally, the study showed that intracranial pressure decreases significantly with change of posture from supine to upright, and that negative intracranial pressure could be considered normal. New reference ranges would provide the greatest benefit in situations in which the difference from normal is most in question, as is observed in normal pressure hydrocephalus and overdrainage situations. Thank you for listening. Follow the JNS on Twitter at #TheJNS, and please like us on Facebook at Journal of Neurosurgery Publishing Group. Comments on this podcast can be sent to jnspodcast@thejns.org.